Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of the Personal Wealth Coach, in which, just before it, you heard, and there they go, they're flying directly over the Queen's head and saluting, or in salute.
In salute, yes.
Right, and so, I always thought that was fascinating.
Interesting.
All those aircraft flew directly over the Queen's head, yes. Which is...
Hopefully not too low over the Queen's head.
But her head must be very, very large.
It's a big aircraft. And
because all of those aircraft flew directly over her head.
Yes. Well, it's the English speaking. Let's see. They speak English over there. We have to give them some form of leeway.
I mean, would you think that some of the aircraft were slightly to the left or right or her,
no,
directly
no,
over
they
her
were all directly over her
directly over her head.
Over her That's head. What the commentator said this. It just has
right,
to be
and they
true.
Were saluting her by flying directly over her head.
Right. So welcome to the Personal Wealth Coach with...
Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. Did we already, we didn't say that.
We didn't say that part.
No, we didn't say that. Well, it was our failure, obviously, not to say that. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are both a radio program, which you probably can...
I bet they figured that one out.
I don't know. You know, you have to disclose everything, like close cover before striking.
Coffee may be hot when you order it hot.
Yeah, I've seen those warnings. The cigarette smoking can cause you to die.
Yes. Not only are we a radio program, we're also a registered investment advisory firm. We're registered
with
the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Wow. What does that mean?
It means that we have filed some papers. Not a whole lot more, but we like to think we have some degree of knowledge in the world of investments.
I'm working on a second degree of knowledge. So there, yeah.
There's third-degree burns lead to peeling, right. And we're very peeled.
Well, anyway, we like to talk about things that have to do with the economy. Is that economy? Is that how you...
Economy?
Yeah, I mean, if it's eco...
We are eco-warriors.
That's it.
Warriors of the economy.
And we like to talk about things that has to do with investing and items of that ilk. So if you would like to talk to us about this and ask questions or make comments... and perhaps redirect our thoughts and comments to something more intelligent than the goofy things we normally talk about. And we have a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Long-time listener.
Well, that's an understatement.
Seems like lately there's been triple-digit swings in the market almost daily, both positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what's causing this. Is it electronic computer training, and is this the new norm? Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right. I can tell you what's causing
it. What's causing it? People buying and selling
people
stuff.
People buying and selling stuff, yes. There's a couple of things that we can look at that happen regularly. And I'll hand this back to you at your leisure.
I want to see you hand it back
yes,
to me.
The greatest piece of this has nothing to do with what everybody's talking about. The greatest piece of the volatility that we have is that during the summer, there's less people trading. And we're in the summer now.
I've heard this before somewhere.
Yes.
Like last summer.
Last summer. It happens just about every summer when there are less people trading. Each person's trade causes more movement in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And
market
that's,
movement.
That's if you just think about this in the terms of an auction. If there are five people in an auction, the movement in the bidding is much more drastic than it is if there are 20 people in an auction. They have much smaller increments of movement in the auction.
Mm.
And that's just because there are people that say, I'm not going to pay any more than fill in the blank. And if you get enough of those people, then you have the whole spectrum covered.
Well,
there are other reasons, too.
Yeah, there's some other the purported reasons, which make a lot of sense. And Jake mentioned it. If you look at a chart, you'll see everything is kind of smooth and steady until some point in May when all of a sudden it starts to bob around. And that's the old sell in May and go away story. Although,
which doesn't work very well.
Which
didn't
you know,
work at all last year. Didn't work
dependable.
At all the year before.
But what he said is definitely an amplifier of what's going on. The purported reason has nothing to do with computer trading. It has to do with the fact that people are skittish.
Yes.
And
they don't even know why they're skittish.
The
biggest excuse they use is the Federal Reserve. Well, the Federal Reserve's not saying anything differently than they did a month or 2 months or 3 months ago.
And there's just a general right now well, let's put it like this. In reading the financial literature that has to do with stocks and bonds and so on, there's a tremendous number of people commenting on something called tapering, which is incidentally a term that the Federal Reserve does not like and does not use, meaning that at some point the Federal Reserve will stop buying as many bonds every month as they're buying right now. When that happens, interest rates will probably rise. Bonds will probably fall. And there's some concern, and this is what is causing the spookiness of the traders in the market. There's some concern that the economy will then falter because, very frankly, if you look at the numbers, and I've been looking at a lot of them recently.
So have I. It's amazing. I looked at the number one just this morning.
You did. I'm quite confident. The economy is right on the edge of slipping into deflation. And it could do so very easily. And I realize that a lot of, particularly on the right wing, a lot of people are saying, no, 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 there's really inflation out there. It's terrible because Ben Bernanke's pumped all this money into the economy. Certainly, Senator Rand Paul is saying that the Federal Reserve should basically either be abolished or taken over by the Congress because the Congress is ever so much more effective at doing things than the Federal Reserve is. I won't go into that. Okay. But the point is that I think a lot of people realize that if the Federal Reserve were to suddenly cut off its bond buying, there would be some repercussions at this point, and they would not be pleasant. I realize that's a frightening aspect. Well, why are we so dependent on that? Because we're so dependent on that because historically we should be in a depression right now. 2009 should have been roughly the equivalent of 1929. And if that's true, then we're only in 1933, and 1934 was the dead bottom of the market. So
right. We've actually recovered a little bit better than then.
Yes, we've done a lot better, and it's largely, if not completely, because of a combination of federal government activity before Congress stopped it, and the activities of the Federal Reserve in keeping money flowing into the economy. I'll give you an example. If the United States economy were a human body, it would be in the hospital right now with an IV drip.
Right.
Because we're still bleeding internally. And we've lost a lot of blood, and it needs to be replaced. And if it isn't, if that were suddenly to be cut off and the patient sent home at this point, the patient would probably relapse into whatever into shock.
Yeah, well, let's give that analogy a little bit further. Let's say we were overweight. The economies of the entire world, all of the big economies in the world are overweight. And that's one of the major problems to this internal bleeding. So there are three approaches to how we treated this problem. We've got internal bleeding. We've got problems. China said, all right, we're going to go on an IV full open, and a stomach feeding tube. We said, we're going to do an IV drip. And Europe said, we're going to go on a diet because we're overweight. And I realize we're bleeding, but we're going to go on a diet because we're overweight, and that's a problem. You've seen how well that worked for Europe. Europe is now still bleeding actually more than it was before they went on the diet. They're losing weight, but not in a good way. They're bleeding faster than they are losing weight from not eating. China is seeing inflation, so they're getting more overweight. They've stopped the bleeding, but they're getting more overweight, and they've got a lot more healthiness. We are, with a drip going, slowly getting our muscles up to speed, and now with sequester, we've started a diet. Well, we're still bleeding. So the question now, the big experiment is, is this effective? Is this going to work going forward?
Yeah, sequester is not a good thing, according to the economists that I read. As a matter of fact, I can't find a single economist who even suggests it's a good thing. Admittedly, there are certain politicians who say it's a wonderful thing if we just cut a lot of spending and get out of debt really, really quickly. But factually, the reality is quite different. And it's one of the reasons, by the way, that, well, Abby Joseph Cohen, I just listened to this morning on a podcast. I don't know if you know who she is, but she's been a fairly accurate prognosticator of major market moves. I love that term. She's a prognosticator. But she, and she's quite a while, but she said that the, she's been asked by a lot of people, shouldn't we get completely out of bonds? Shouldn't we go completely into stocks at this point? Which is, I thought, pretty ironic because people are asking me the same question. The fact is that come October, we have a confluence.
Well, if you're going to use big words, then it will be very specific. September 30th at midnight on the end of September 30th. That's the date that
That's one of the things.
Right. That's the continuing resolution ends there. The debt ceiling is in question at that point, and sequester also goes into
full blast.
Yeah. So this it's kind of the magic moment
right there in the September October time frame. We have the potential for what I like to use the term confluence of a lot of bad stuff coming together at the same time. In other words, it's a second fiscal cliff.
I had my confluence shot.
You did?
Yesterday.
Well, that's
so
good. The economy is going to need one, I'll tell you. So the distinct possibility exists, and this is part of why you're seeing some fluctuations in the market, very frankly. The distinct possibility exists that the Congress of the United States, that according to them, terribly efficient organization that needs to take over everything else, could shove us back into a recession. The last time we had this kind of setup facing us, not counting the fiscal cliff, but the last time we had a debt deadline and a whole series and continuing resolutions and all kinds of things running out at the same time was back in 2011. We had a 16% drop in the market. We had our credit rating chopped from AAA to AA+, and that was one of the bigger shocks since the collapse of Lehman Brothers and the things that went with it. And
yeah, this goes back to the caller's question. This is one of the major reasons for the volatility.
Yeah, people are starting to get a little skittish about that at this point.
Starting again. We've been skittish the whole time, but every time we start getting close to
It's an artificial crisis, but it's still a crisis. And it's a crisis, you know, if you listen to me last week, I was talking about the fact that that Secretary Gates, when asked what is the greatest threat to the safety and security of the United States of America, said Congress.
Yeah, U.S. Congress. It is the truth.
You know, he simply said that the partisan gridlock in Congress is creating a series of fiscal uncertainties and potential disasters that are emboldening our enemies and terrifying our friends, and we easily could wind up with much bigger problems than any that are being dealt with in Congress because the members of Congress are unwilling to talk to each other.
There is a consensus in the ISI group is a group of economists. They do a lot of institutional-level research.
USI?
Papers. ISI.
USI?
ISI.
Oh. Well, ISI, too.
Oh, ISI, too.
Okay.
All right. So they do a lot of research. They do surveys among economists, and they gather a lot of information. And the consensus is that if the United States corporate tax code were changed to be much more like what it is everywhere else in the world, we would bring in a massive amount of revenue.
Let's say massive.
Massive. So
massive.
A couple of weeks ago, I was talking on here about how we had the second highest corporate income tax rate in the world. Well, since then, it has become the highest corporate tax rate in the world, not because we raised ours, but because Japan lowered theirs significantly. And the consensus among these economists, we've looked around at the large corporations that are based in the United States, and you can just start naming them off. Everybody is familiar with these names: General Electric, GE, ExxonMobil,
Little Bitty Soft,
eBay, Microsoft. Just keeps right on going. Google,
Apple.
These have roughly $1.5 trillion in cash sitting out there that they would like to bring back because their innovation doesn't take place out there. They might make their sales out there, but their innovation takes place here. So if they want to reinvest, they have to bring the cash here. But right now, it costs them 39.4% of the money to bring it here. The rest of the world averages around 20%. So we're double the world average in corporate tax rate. And if you think that if we just brought it to the world average, if we just said we're going to go an average stream of revenue, we could, at 20%, because the consensus is that those major corporations would bring it back if it were a 20% tax rate, because they've already paid taxes outside the country. They wouldn't have to pay that same tax twice. It would just be, so for instance, in Ireland, they've got a 4% tax rate. Well, they'd pay 16% on getting back to the United States. That would raise about $300 billion in revenue immediately. So that would put our budget receipts, and this is, again, right now we're making about $2.7 trillion in our budget from corporate and social insurance and other revenue and individual tax, all that good stuff coming in. That would raise it to $3 trillion. Our federal outlays, our budget outlays, what we're going into debt for, we're spending $3.6 trillion, we're making $2.7 trillion. If we had another $300 billion coming in, we would have a deficit this year of $600 billion.
Which is not too far from what's projected.
Right. Well, that's if we continue to make more revenue in the other areas, the projections are saying that we may have a balanced budget if we just reformed the corporate tax code. And people are talking about doing it, but there's a lot of things like that that both sides of the aisle could look at that and say, we've got a tax rate that's too high on corporations.
But right now, and I, by the way, I read a very interesting comment by a unnamed Republican senator. I mean, it literally was unnamed in the journal, where it said that he would not agree to that because it would make the president look good.
Right.
Which is very, and I'm not saying that the Republicans are worse than the Democrats or anything else. I'm just saying that's the atmosphere in Washington right now.
It's partisan. It isn't about...
If there were a Republican president, I can assure you the Democrats would be blocking anything good for the country, because it would make the Republican president look good.
And what we're looking at here is that gridlock, while generally speaking, gridlock is something that I'm a big fan of. I don't think the government should be doing much of anything, unless they've already created a massive bunch of disasters waiting to happen unless they do something. And we are now walking through a minefield that was placed in our path by Congress. And Congress is blithely wandering through the minefield that they went through and laid. They're blindfolding themselves and wandering through the minefield that they laid themselves because they don't want the other side to look better.
And it almost seems like I prophesied this a while back. I didn't mean to. Famous comment just before John Carter walked into our studio one day that if pro is the opposite of con, is Congress the opposite of progress? Man, I didn't realize what a truth statement I was making. Anyway, some other news that's going on, and this is why the market is bouncing up and down. It's a fear trade, which tends to go on in the summer.
Right, and just as a side note right there, that sequester is going to be about $55 billion starting in the end of September for the next fiscal year.
I thought it was 85. But anyway, yeah, okay.
$55 billion split two ways. So, I mean, there's 55 from each, so it's higher. 85 is what we've seen so far. So 85... Yeah. 55 from defense and 55 from non-defense.
And let me give you an example why people are so afraid of the Federal Reserve cutting off the buying of $85 billion a month in bonds. By the way, again, they're not running a printing press. They don't have a printing press to do that with.
No printing press involved there.
As a matter of fact, they have to use the U.S. government printing office when they publish anything.
Yes.
But the federal government in May reduced its employment. Now, this is not counting soldiers, not counting just across the board, has reduced in May 14,000. There's 14,000 fewer government employees at the end of May than there were at the beginning of May. 43,000 fewer, and I say government, federal government employees, 43,000 fewer over the last year. Now, does that sound like an awful lot? The Postal Service, meanwhile, in addition to that, cut 4,000 jobs in May, and the Postal Service has reduced its workforce by 30,000 people in the last year. Now, across the board, if you followed the employment figures that just came in, we had a really good report. This is part of that same May report out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that our net hiring was 178,000 people. I mean, we in the United States, we created 178,000 jobs, but the federal government is not supporting that at all. The federal government is going the other way.
And opposite of that.
And that's going to accelerate because sequester is only partially in place. It won't really go into place until October. And when that happens, when $110 billion go out of the economy, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, well, we really need to do that because we need to get out of debt.
Let me address that statement.
But let me finish this statement right here.
Okay.
The fact that the DRIP, which we'll call it the DRIP,
the DRIP,
instead of QE3, which is a non-existent ocean liner, it also
doesn't exist yet.
The name of an asteroid that missed the Earth recently. we'll call it the DRIP from the Fed. The DRIP from the Fed will partially offset the money that the federal government is yanking out of the system.
Right.
And unfortunately, the DRIP from the Fed does not have a great deal of ripple effect. It doesn't have a multiplier effect. However, the money, the employment that is coming out of the system as sequester takes place, you'll be probably, if it doesn't get changed, and I don't think it will, come the end of this year, if you go over into the Killeen Heights area and you ask around, you will see the ripple effect because there will be fewer people working in the restaurants. There'll be fewer people working in the car dealers. There'll be fewer mechanics working because there'll be a tremendous number of defense contractors on the Fort Hood side of things who won't have jobs anymore.
Right.
And that's what people are worried about.
So coming back to this, there are people that say, well, we do want to get out of debt and this is going to do it.
Even come close.
Let me remind the listener of how we got to sequester. Do you remember the super committee?
Yes, I do. It has to do with Sequest.
The Sequest Committee. The Super Sequest Committee. The Super Committee was this group of representatives from the House and senators from the Senate coming together. Selected by the two parties. An even number from each. There was no tie-breaking vote.
Yes.
And they selected the most radical people to sit on the committee. So the law was passed saying that first we got to do some research for the super committee to look at plans, each of which has to work based on the numbers that we know. So there were five separate plans that the super committee looked at, each of which would have worked, each of which we would have been quite fond of supporting. And I will list them. The Paul Ryan plan, for those of you that have forgotten that one, that was one we were 100% behind. The Simpson-Bowles deficit reduction plan, that's bipartisan. We had the
By definition, if it's bipartisan, it can't be any good.
Can't do that.
Well, all of these, this one was would have cut the deficit by the debt by $4 trillion over a 10-year period. The Paul Ryan plan would have been $6 trillion. The Corker-McCaskill plan would have cut spending by capping it at 20.6% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
So that one was a little bit shady. We're not sure because in times of emergency, you don't want to cap government spending. If we're in a war, we may need to spend more. So that was a problem. The Domenici-Rivlin plan. So there's $6 trillion cut there. The Senate's bipartisan Gang of Six plan. All of those were included in the super committee's debate things. Each of them were targeted cuts to say, where is the government doing things wrong? What is it that we can fix here by cutting that out? And then there was the sequester that just said, I don't care if it's doing it right or wrong. We're cutting across the board. Everything that is defense or non-defense discretionary spending, we're going to cut equally.
With the exception of the three biggest items in the budget,
right,
that the ones that are bankrupting us, and you don't touch those.
Yes, the three biggest items being Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and other entitlements. So that's the food stamps and such. So we're talking about, if you throw in net interest on the debt that we already have, we're talking about cuts on only 33% of the government.
Yeah, so what we're doing, and this is basically why the market is fluctuating, is we don't have a resolution in Congress to a long-term problem. And for better or worse, the fact that the economy is improving and the deficit is reducing probably will prevent Congress from doing anything about it, because there is no crisis coming that they're staring in the face.
Even when there was one, sequester was supposed to be their manufactured crisis, the one that was supposed to light a fire under their patooties. Instead of lighting a fire under their patooties, it allowed them to say, look, this fire here was set by those guys over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we probably ought to do some commercials and come back, because they want another subject that relates to this directly. Chrysler did something that is an indicator of what's going on in the big wide world. But we do have commercials to play, so we will be playing commercials for Town Square and KTEM, and we'll be back. We will be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And 773-1400 is the number to call if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400. Anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
Just for the record, today is June 15th. So if it's June 15th, you really can call in.
We are live.
Well, presuming it's June 15th. 2013.
2013.
Yeah, I mean, if it was June 15th of some other
one of these years
of a Saturday though, falling on.
Well, one of these years we should just replay something from several years in the past. We're bringing up all this timely data, and people would be going, "Is that happening again?
Actually,
what's going on here?"
Actually, there's a couple of points in the past where we could play the show, and nobody would.
They would. It is exactly the same thing.
Well, as a matter of fact, we could play 2011 at about this point, and it would be pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
As long as we didn't cite the actual market values, because they're up a whole bunch. But everybody was getting pessimistic and unhappy and so on. Hey, I wanted to bring up, and it has to do with the budget deficit.
Okay.
And the issues that Congress is not dealing with.
Right.
Chrysler took... I mean, basically notified its employees that were still on the on a defined benefit program. Defined benefit program is one where the company takes money out of your pay and then guarantees you a certain amount of income when you retire.
Basically, you get a salary, a pension salary for the rest of your life.
And Chrysler is one of the relatively few major corporations still has that, and they just announced to their employees that you're all going on a defined benefit plan. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the cash value currently in your defined you're going to take the defined benefit cash value, whatever the cash balance, called a cash balance plan, and we're going to roll it over into your 401k. Congratulations. And why are they doing that? Well, the reason they're doing that is because as life expectancies go up and the cost of providing for retiree health care goes up with it, and the length of time you got to pay these people combined with low interest rates, the amount of money that has to be flushed into a guarantee program that says we will give you income the rest of your life becomes staggering.
Yeah, let me just give an even simpler reason why they're doing this. Because if you look at it in the purely common sense approach, if you just come at it and say, what is the purpose of a corporation? Well, it's to make money for its shareholders. And part of that purpose is making sure its employees are happy. But if you're paying employees who aren't even working there anymore, for the rest of their lives, you're not making money for your shareholders.
And it was when these were first set up, it made sense because most people were dead before 70. Now, life expectancies for people who do things that corporations have encouraged, like stop smoking, lose weight, get your blood pressure down.
See, I'm not dead before 70. I'm alive before 70 right now. I just thought I'd let you know that.
These people have life expectancies that are way out there. Well, now why is that? Why do I bring this up? I mean, probably there's probably no one listening to the radio show today.
I'm not.
That works for Chrysler.
Oh, right. Oh, that part. I thought you were talking about no one listening to the radio show.
Even if they had been working for Chrysler, and they would have already gotten the notice, so it wouldn't be news to them. Well, here's the point. There is one major employer and organization in this country.
Major. Very major.
Major, major, major. The biggest employer, the biggest
the biggest single entity in the United States.
Right. That is losing money hand over fist.
And fist over hand.
And it is, like Chrysler, has been guaranteeing the income of
pension.
Not only its employers, its employees, but of its shareholders.
Everybody. Everybody gets
some
money.
The bottom line, and people will shriek at this, literally.
Yep.
The bottom line is that the United States government cannot guarantee the economic well-being of all of its citizens to infinity, given the changes that are going on in mortality rates.
Right. Well, they can't do it the way they're doing it, that's for sure.
Well, and until we address that, until we address the fact that it's exactly the same thing that happened to Chrysler. By the way, another place that this is going on is Caterpillar.
One other thing, and I've got to say this, this isn't exactly the same thing that's happening on at Chrysler.
Why?
Because Chrysler actually has a bucket of money sitting there that the federal government requires them to have money where the United States government has been
IOUs. But we have a bucket of money. It's all over at the Federal Reserve.
We'll just take your money.
That's what we're doing right now.
Why not?
But this is my point here is that there's another company, Caterpillar, that has done very, very well, unlike Chrysler that kind of was...
U.S. government to guarantee them.
Caterpillar's been doing very, very well, but Caterpillar just announced they're laying off about between 4,000 and 6,000 people in one factory because the gigantic electric hole diggers that dig out pits for commodities are not in as much demand as they were in the recent past.
Gigantic electronic hole diggers.
Electric.
Electric hole diggers that dig out commodities.
Right. Like
mining vehicles.
Yes.
Right.
Gigantic electric vehicles that go underground and
dig holes and pull
out things like copper.
And gold.
And stuff.
Coal and
stuff.
Things like that.
Yeah, well, and of course, the issue is that having things running down there that are emitting noxious gases is generally frowned upon, so they use electric ones, okay?
Right.
Which are very expensive, but you know, it's one of the things. Now the unions at the new union contract has just come through. Everything's cool. This is the interesting thing about that union contract: the wages of existing workers remain flat indefinitely, and new workers hired in the future by Caterpillar will go on a lower wage scale, and that is the kind of thing that has caused strikes across every industry where it's been proposed before. They're not doing it here. This is the point. Even Caterpillar, a company that is one of the most profitable, well-run, economically stable companies in the United States, has managed to convince their unions that they have got to stop paying so much money to their employees. They've got to, and incidentally, they have converted all of their defined benefit plans into defined contribution plans. And, I mean, they've done a lot of things. Fortunately, their unions are smart enough to realize that this is a necessity,
right,
or they'll go out of business.
Well, they just watched as other corporations had their unions say, we don't believe you. You're not going to go out.
Yeah.
Oh, we're out of business.
Well,
no jobs.
Caterpillar shut down its Canadian subsidiary and just closed all the plants.
Because Canada was saying, hey, we don't believe you. And they
said,
we're out of there.
We're going to call your bluff. And you're not going to walk away from these factories. And
Caterpillar said it's going to cost us a lot of money, but it'll cost us a lot less money than if we have to keep paying for non-profitable stuff.
So what's the lesson here? Well, the lesson is pretty simple. Economically, it isn't possible for the United States government to continue to fund full blast retirements for its civil servants, its military, Social Security, Medicare. Something has got to give there.
Let me go I mentioned this earlier. Go ahead.
The people who are recipients of this, by and large across the country, are pretending it ain't so.
Right. The sequester is affecting 36% of the budget, of the continuing resolution. The sequester is affecting roughly $1 trillion of spending of the $3.6 trillion is being affected by sequester. And that's being split. In September, it'll be split $55 billion to a $500 billion budget for the military and a $500 billion budget for non-defense discretionary spending. So $55 billion each. That means that other than interest on the debt, which is only 8%, the rest of that is entitlements. The rest of that is Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and other entitlements. That's unemployment insurance, mm-hmm. food stamps, mm-hmm. welfare, farm aid, those things. And if we're in a position now that the only thing that we're cutting is the smallest portion of the budget, that's not going to effectively do anything. Now, the Paul Ryan plan, the reason why nobody liked the Paul Ryan plan is because it cut everything. It cut across the board.
Let me put this in something that I think we can all understand. The federal government is in the position where it's projected to make this year, and I'm going to use some very rough figures here, so don't get too mad at me. The equivalent of, let's just say you were making $2,300 a month. Now, this is a year in this case, but let's just talk about this in terms that we can relate to, okay?
The estimate is $2.7 trillion for the year, what I'm looking at here.
In revenue?
In revenue,
okay, yeah. So you're making $27,000
year. There you go. That's a lot easier to take off a bunch of those zeros.
And you decide that you're going to cut you're going to cut $1,110 roughly from your budget. You're spending roughly $30,000. You're making $27,000. Is that right? No.
You're making $27,000. Yeah, you're spending $36,000.
You're spending $36,000. You're making $27,000, and you're going to cut $1,100 out of your budget.
Still a problem there.
And you're going to do so by paying the electric company only part of the bill.
Right.
And you're only going to pay part of your car payment, and you're only going to pay
that the people that have the debts that you've accrued are going to say either we're not going to do business with you anymore, and if you were on a personal and private setting, they would come and take the thing that you're not paying on. With the government, it will mean that many corporations will simply stop doing business with the government. If you think about the contracting companies, the big ones that are out there, KBR and Halliburton.
Well, it's basically like in this case, if you're in the 27,000 versus the roughly 30,000
right.
you're spending.
36.
And you say, tell you what, we're going to have the alarm security company no longer monitor our house except
Tuesdays.
Except Tuesdays. Yeah, that's it.
Because that's when statistically, even if they said statistically Tuesdays are when most robberies happen,
they're not even doing that.
They're just saying, let's choose a day,
Well, actually,
Tuesday.
It's more like we're going to cut coverage on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Yeah, at least the five other plans, the other budget plans, had, well, statistically, more robberies happen on Tuesdays. So I think we should keep coverage on Tuesday. But well, the sequester has just got everything.
The point is that it doesn't, the way the government is doing this doesn't make a great deal of sense. It is, and it, but, you know, the bottom line to it is, and I hate to be nice about this, temporarily, there's a high probability that we will get through this very nicely.
Yep.
I don't personally think the Republicans in the House will, in fact, blow up the government.
No, I don't think so either. I think we're going to get through it.
But here's the threat, which is why we leave bonds in people's hands. Here's the threat. The threat is brinksmanship is inherently dangerous.
Brinksmanship is taking us to the edge and saying, I'm going to jump off if you don't do this. I'm going to do it.
Because you can slip at the last minute. For example, in 2011, at the end of July, Congress, the House of Representatives, passed a bill and went home. The Senate had not passed that bill yet. If something failed, some aspect of the bill passed by the House of Representatives
wasn't accepted by the Senate for whatever
reason.
Well, not reason.
Even if it was, you know, they basically it was, I'm holding a gun to your head, you've got to accept it. But let's just say some aspect of the bill, they failed to include a provision in there of some kind that they just overlooked by accident.
Too bad. They were gone already.
They were gone home.
And, they didn't have a quorum.
And yeah, they could have all come back.
That would have been difficult,
but
and
it would have
been late.
It would have taken several days to come back. And during that time period, a lot of people didn't get paid. They got paid 2 weeks later. The military didn't get paid in that pay cycle. But it would cause chaos around the world. In other words, they had taken it to the very edge, and I mean the very edge, to the point where literally the military would have to stand down around the world because it could no longer legally purchase fuel, purchase food. I mean, that's how close to the edge we got on this. Now, Jake and I...
Several of the military didn't receive pay anyway. They just didn't get it.
They got it made up later.
Yeah, it came back later, but that didn't help them when they needed their groceries that month.
It is... I don't think a lot of people understand the insanity.
It's like a chickie race. You're chickie? From the 60s. Yes.
What's a chickie race?
The chickie race is where there's a cliff, and you get two hot rods, and you run full speed at the cliff from the top of the cliff.
And you win if you go off the cliff?
And you win if you are the last person to hit the brakes.
And you, by the way, then you win if you go off the cliff.
Right, yeah. You obviously, by definition of the race, you win if you go off the cliff because you didn't hit the brakes.
That's why they call it a fiscal cliff.
Yes, it's exactly why they call it a fiscal cliff.
And so is there something to be afraid of? Yes. Do I think we're going to get through it one way or the other? Yes, I think we'll get through it one way or the other. Do I think we're going to see an economy that's going to do very, very well over the next several years? Yes, I do. But we do need to somehow get ourselves back to sanity and sit down together and be able to discuss these things, which right now, in Bell County, in Bell, Coryell County, in this area, the fingers are pointed at the liberals and saying it's their fault. But believe me, if you go to other places, they're pointing back at us.
Go to Austin, in Travis County, they're saying it's the conservatives, they're not getting anything passed,
And it's got to start with let's sit down and talk. And
yeah, in this particular chicky race, it isn't even as minorly stupid as the old chicky race because all of our cars are chained together. So even if you did hit the brakes and the other guy goes flying off and you go, man, that was dumb. Well, the chain gets tight and yanks you off with them because
anything to do with the chained inflation?
The chained CPI is holding all of
That's
the cars together in the chicky race. I think they call that a mixed metaphor.
Yeah, well, anyway. And
we're very mixed.
And again, for those of you who like smaller government, we got to do some commercials here. But for those of you who like smaller government, you should be very happy The federal government has cut 43,000 people in the last year.
I'm kind of happy that the government's making cuts, because it's a rare thing, but I'm not happy in how they're making the cuts. It's not effective. In long term, it's damaging.
Very frankly, I'm not sure the government needs to make cuts at this point, but that's
right.
There's a lot of things we need to
address. At some point,
they
do, but yeah.
But we've got some more commercials to play, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And had a number of people. Oh, by the way, telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Caught you there, didn't I? Yeah, you were thinking about something else. Hey, I've had a number of people who apparently Investment Business Daily had a column or a op-ed or an editorial or something that said the government is hiring thousands of more people to administer Obamacare, and the government employment is up. And the folks, it ain't so. And one of the reasons that I say I don't think the government needs to be laying off people at this point is because we do have a lot of government programs out there that need to be administered. They need to be monitored. They need to be examined about the way things are happening. For example, there's a host of people that need to be investigating the IRS right now. And if you keep laying people off, there's nobody left to investigate the IRS. So, oddly enough, it's kind of stupid to lay off people in the IRS to try to save money, because they actually are the people who make money for the government. So, like I said, the more people the government lays off, the more scandal you're going to find from something that wasn't looked at the way it's supposed to. And that's just my 2 cents worth. I think there's the expenses that government has that can be cut and should be cut are big. They are critical. And they require some serious looking at. And some people did, including across the board. And Congress rejected them all and said cut everything, which is not a lot of fun. We didn't even talk about stocks this hour.
Yeah, we'll have to get to that next hour. We're almost out of time for this hour.
Okay.
If you would like to reach us off the air, we actually manage money for a living. We give advice based for a fee. We are fiduciaries.
We manage people's portfolios.
Yes. And
investment portfolios, not their art portfolios.
Right. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting, although during the week there is a live person that answers.
Really?
Voicemail is locally.
947-1111. And the reason it's 947-1111 is so I can remember it's 947-1111. And I can remember that. See, that's why it lets me say it.
Ah, well done. And if you want to reach us toll-free, it's 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
See, that's so I can remember, too, 914-PLAN.
Right. Yes, and you may email us, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And you can also go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and listen to podcasts and so on.
You can also read all kinds of good stuff that I wrote on there.
Yes. Yes, he did. And he actually wrote it in the documents rather than on the screen.
I tried that, and it just didn't work.
It just
gets
messy.
The whiteout on the screen got kind of messy.
Yeah, and it doesn't work very well.
Well, anyway, you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we'll be back next hour with more exciting stuff.
News Radio 1400 KTEN.